Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Boleyn, your host, and it is time to do it your way. Okay, friends, today's episode, I'm sitting down with Katie Doherty, who is the founder of LaRousse Shop, and it is a resource for photographers to purchase decorative packaging and boxing material. So LaRousse originally started out as a platform for Katie to promote her wedding photography, but after not being able to find products to suit her brand style and aesthetics, she decided to make products of her own. Introduce LaRousse. How flippin' savvy is that? And so this is just another great story about someone who created the product that they needed for themselves, and then it turned into a full-on fledging brand and product and business of its own. Since her brand and products have continued to skyrocket, and they have been featured in Allure Magazine, Conrad's, Lauren Conrad's Holiday Gift Guide, as well as MSN's 25 Holiday Gifts under $100. So in this episode, you will know how to create the solution to your problem, be able to find suppliers for your product, learn to let go of aspects of your business and outsource, and know what to consider when picking a new space for your business, along with figure out if you want to be a hands-off or hands-on CEO. Hi guys, friends, we are back with another interview, and today I'm hanging out with Katie Doherty, who is an entrepreneur, photographer, and founder of LaRousse. And so I'm super excited to welcome Katie to the show.
Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much. I'm excited too.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to dive into your journey as an entrepreneur and how you've grown outside of your photography business, and now you have a physical product, and how you started that. So why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about what you're doing today, and then we'll talk about your journey and how you got there.
Yeah, sounds great. So as of today, I am working on LaRousse Shop. I would say it's not full-time, it's part-time. And what it is a resource, or a website rather, for photographers to purchase really pretty packaging materials. So the best seller, the product that we started the whole business around, is a glass photo box. And we started out with just one glass photo box. It's sort of similar to a jewelry box, but it is made out of glass and brass, and it's made to fit standard print sizes like 4x6, 5x7. We also have an 8x10. And then we also have like flash drives and ribbon and some other little pretty extra add-ons. But the box is basically what the whole website and brand is about.
Yeah, and they are beautiful as well. Like, they're gorgeous. So I can't wait to dive into talk about how you source them, what inspired them, how you like produce them. But first, take us back to how you got started. So what led to the moment of you starting LaRousse?
Sure. So going all the way back to, I think it's kind of interesting to tell what I was doing right beforehand. So I went to school to become an elementary school teacher, and that's what I was so set on doing. I was completely convinced that that's what I wanted to be and that's what I wanted to do. So out of college and grad school, I actually got my first teaching job abroad. And so I went to Vietnam and lived and worked there for a year. And that was an incredible experience because I had it made me feel like I had a lot of freedom to travel when I was on the downtime and days that I had off, and it felt very freeing to be there and working. But then when I came back to California, I got a different teaching job, and was just really run down by how many hours I had to work and how little I was paid. And I mean, that's no secret. Everyone knows the teachers aren't really like rolling in the dough and that they work really hard. So I think what initially kind of prompted me to leave teaching was just not enough freedom. And I wanted something that I could create the kind of lifestyle I wanted for myself instead of having my job kind of dictate the type of life that I was having. So it started off with just an idea that I actually created this glass box. Oh, so I fast forwarded a little too much. So no worries. I left my teaching job and kind of said, nope, I'm going to go into photography or something creative and have my own business on my own time frame. And so photography had always kind of been a hobby of mine, especially with traveling. And I got into wedding photography and children's photography back in 2013, I think the year was. And then the following year, 2014, I was really trying to hone in on like packaging and what type of gifts I could give the couple after I shot their wedding. And so I looked online for print boxes, and there were a lot of linen print boxes and wooden boxes that were beautiful. They just didn't quite match my branding, and I wanted something a little bit more unique. So I searched online for this product, couldn't find it anywhere, and ended up sourcing it, which I can go into more detail on. And the first box we sold was, or I say we because I have a business partner now, but back in the early days, it was just myself. And the first day I sold a box online, I was like, I wonder if this is something that a lot of people would want just other than myself.
I mean, I have to imagine that would be pretty incredible to get the first sale online and being like, oh my gosh, it's real. Yeah. Like someone's buying
it. Worked. Mm-hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about the transition then from when you went to, from a teacher and then to do photography. Like take us back to that transition and
sure.
Buying your camera and learning how to do photography. And what was it like the first year building that book of business and clients up?
Mm-hmm. I remember going home at night after my teaching job and tinkering around with building websites. Like I didn't even have any pictures at this point, but I wanted to just create something. And so whenever I have an idea, I kind of take a first step or like a little bit of a leap, even though I don't really know where it's going. That's sort of the way I operate, to just kind of roll one little step at a time. So I was building this website and just kind of putting pictures up there that I had of like my coffee cup or what I had for breakfast or like silly little things, nothing professional at all. And I began to become a lot more interested. I'd gotten a camera, a DSLR, my first one after I graduated college. And I was really self-taught during this year where I was teaching. I kind of on the side and, you know, weekends and stuff was learning about how to use my camera. And so the internet was a great resource just by looking up YouTube videos and blogs and all these articles about digital photography. I also had a friend who had been in the wedding photography business for a few years. And so he was kind of my mentor. And then I did take one side night evening class at a local college to learn how to use my camera. But that was all while I was still full time. After I quit teaching, I was a third grade teacher. I ended up moving back home, which is just the county north of Los Angeles. It's called Ventura County. And I think this was like my second time moving back in with my parents. And I'm like, oh gosh, here we go again. But I basically just did part-time teaching and tutoring. And the other part-time was trying to build my portfolio with friends and, you know, people here and there would give me a couple hundred dollars, and there was no real profit being made this first year, but at least I had a little bit of security with my parents letting me stay with them, obviously helps with rent. And then I would still do part-time. So it went from full-time to part-time. And then I kind of let the teaching fade away in my third year.
Now, the transit, I'm just taking notes, but to going from, like, was it hard? Did people think, fine, like, were they like, Katie, you're crazy, you're leaving teaching and you're doing this thing? Like, did you meet any resistance during that piece of your journey?
That's a good question. I really didn't. I don't know if I have really supportive family and friends or if they just thought it and didn't say it. I don't know. But I think my dad a little bit was taken aback by the fact that I just spent all this money on student loans to become a teacher. And then 3 years later, or actually, I guess it was 2 years later, I had completely changed my mind. So he was kind of more like, well, why don't you try another school or, you know, give it a little bit more time. But I guess I got impatient. So everyone that I came across was really supportive. They never had any doubts.
They knew that Katie was on a mission and doing her thing.
Yeah.
So that was back in, so in 2014 was when you started looking for the print box and you couldn't find it. So talk to us then, fast forward, we're at the LaRue shop. How, take us back to the early days. What did it look like? Where did you source your products and how did that all work out?
Yes. So this was toward the end of 2014. I had been listening to a lot of podcasts. I was new to podcasts around that year and found a particular podcast, which like completely blew my mind. And in terms of what was possible with product-based businesses.
Which one was it?
It's called The Money Pillow. It's a little bit under the radar. It's not like a huge, everyone knows about it podcast, but the first season is the one I listened to and it's with Sean Malarkey. It's called The Money Pillow. It's great. But I listened to that and I heard all of these amazing entrepreneurs coming up with ideas and then not only ideas, but then pushing them or rolling them into a physical product. So I started by searching online, like extensively to see what I could see. I typed in glass photo box, plain glass box, 4x6 glass box, but nothing, literally nothing at this time was coming up. So I kind of assumed that didn't exist, or if it did, I just wasn't finding it. So I went on a website called Alibaba. Have you talked about this at all with your...
No, I haven't. I mean, I know what it is, but I would love for you to dive into it.
So it is basically a huge marketplace. It's like, I think, I don't want to misspeak, but I think it's at least as large as Amazon in terms of like the traffic and the money and stuff that's going on behind the scenes, but it's connects buyers with overseas suppliers. So a lot of them are based, the companies on Alibaba are based in China and India. And you basically, it's a big search engine place. You go in and you type whatever you're looking for. So I typed something along the lines of glass box and a lot of weird stuff comes up. It's not a particularly clean website or like easy to navigate. And you have to sift through kind of some weird stuff. But I found one supplier who was making, how do I say, it's kind of like a terrarium. Maybe you've seen them. They're like kind of geometric shape and you would put a plant or something in it. He had the materials, but he wasn't making the exact product that I was interested in. So I just messaged him, and you can get a lot of variation on Alibaba with like English language barriers, but his English was really easy to understand. So we first emailed back and forth. I said, these are the dimensions that I want for the box. I drew him a little sketch like in Photoshop with the measurements like length, width, height. And I said, could you make this for me? And he said, of course. And that was actually, maybe I got lucky, but that was the first person I contacted and the same person that we still use like to this day to make our boxes. So what happens next is we got a sample created. So there's no way around it. The first sample that you get from overseas is going to cost a lot of money in shipping. I think for the piece itself, it was like $5 or something, but the shipping to get it to California was maybe like $50 or $75.
Oh, wow.
So the shipping is not going to be cheap, but I mean, how could you not get a sample? You have to see at least one in person before you just go for it and get like an order of 100 or something. Mm-hmm. So I got the sample about maybe a month after I had initially emailed him. And I had, the first one I had made was a square box. It was 5 by 5 inches. And Let me start over. Artifact Uprising is one of my favorite places to print photos. I'm obsessed with all their stuff.
What is it?
And it's called Artifact Uprising.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's beautiful. If you need like any kind of printed product, they have really, really pretty stuff.
Yeah.
So I had been using their prints that are printed on like this really thick sort of recycled paper, and it has a nice matte finish, like sort of watercolor paper, but it's very affordable. So I had these square prints that I wanted to put inside the glass box, and they actually did not fit because I didn't account for the fact that the box was 5 by 5 inches and then the prints were also exactly that size. So it was just one little tweak. I emailed my guy and I said, we need to make them just like a half inch, you know, bigger on all the sides so that the prints can actually go in. And then we had it, we had the product. And I think I ordered about 50 after that and put up a website through Shopify. I would greatly recommend Shopify to anyone who wants to sell something online. I think it's about $30 a month. You could also use something like Big Cartel. I think they only charge about $10 a month, but Shopify has a lot of added features and apps that you know, we really love as a business. So I took some product pictures. I put them on the website. I pulled a price tag out of thin air, which I wouldn't necessarily recommend, but it was the only way I knew, like, you know, I just kind of took a guess and I was like, sure, that sounds like a great price. And so I have to say that one sale in January was like amazing. I don't even know how that woman found the website because I didn't know anything about like getting traffic to my website or marketing. I guess I did know like a smidge about that because of photography, but I didn't have like a big marketing plan for how people were going to find this product. So she bought a box, and then February was dead quiet. I had like zero sales. Didn't really put much. I wasn't putting like full-time effort into this. It was like my side project that I never really imagined would be this big thing. But then I was talking with a friend. His name is Phil, and he's also a wedding photographer. And he lives in New York, but he happened to be back in California on this day. And I remember we were driving along in Santa Monica, and I kind of like very casually brought up this idea and this project that I was working on. And he thought it was amazing. He's like, Katie, you need to like sign me on as your business partner. I can take this to new heights, all this. He was very excited about it. And so I was like, sure, I think a business partner would be a great idea. All of the weight wouldn't be on my shoulders. You know, I could always go to someone for a second opinion or just anything, really. We have a really open, great relationship. So anyway, ever since Phil started on with me, I've seen the business grow like times 10. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And congratulations too for that. And I'm curious then, like, how do you guys, do you do all of your shipping inventory out of your place, or do you have that automated and is someone else taking care of it? Or how has the entire supply chain management process shifted or changed since from when you guys first launched?
So I was living at home at this time, and so I just had all of the products shipped to my parents' house. And I remember that I had mentioned to them that we were getting a shipment of boxes and that I needed a little bit of space in the garage to set them aside. And so that was okay with them, you know, one box stored in the garage, this is fine. But then as the orders started getting bigger, then the garage space was really running low. So let me rewind a little bit, but for the time where we were running out of my parents' garage, I was originally the one who was packing the orders. You know, shop, if someone places an order on the website, you get an email notification, and then you can sign in and see the shipping address and all that and print the shipping label. So I print the shipping label, put it in a box, and take it to the post office. And that lasted for a little while, but then you kind of start to realize, well, what am I in this business? Am I a professional box packer? Like, that's not really what I want to be known for, like necessarily what I want to be spending my time on. So we outsourced that. That was the first thing we outsourced. We had a couple girls come over to my parents' house, and they came probably 3 or 4 days a week and fulfilled any orders that they needed to fulfill. And we had like a little workstation. So we had now taken over one car of the 3-car garage. Oh. And so my mom said, okay, Katie, like, as long as you stay contained over there, it's fine. Like, we need to get at least a car in here and all the other stuff that obviously they store in the garage. And so for a while, we were able to stay in that 1-car garage. And then we started spilling over, and like, we were just taking over the whole thing. So that's when we decided this was just last year. So 2016, toward the beginning of, wait, what year are we in?
I know, right?
This is 17. Yeah, it was earlier this year. It was the beginning of 2017. We handed over our inventory to a fulfillment center. And it was either that, or we would have to, you know, rent a warehouse space and in LA or somewhere close to my parents' place and store the items and work out of there instead of the house. So that was a consideration. But when we did the number crunching of all that that would entail, like renting a space, and then we'd have to sign on employees to fulfill the orders and everything else, it made more sense actually to have a fulfillment center do everything for us. And what a fulfillment center is basically, instead of the products coming from India or China or wherever they're coming from, they go straight from their supplier to our fulfillment center in Texas. Mm-hmm. So whenever an order comes in, our Texas warehouse is the one who's going to pack it and ship it on our behalf.
How did you select your fulfillment center?
Yeah, good question. Okay, so I'm like kind of a crazy perfectionist. I want everything down to like the sticker being straight on the packaging. Like, I want it all to be as perfect as it can be. And I was kind of convinced that unless I did it myself, that it would never be perfect, because like, no one else would care as much as I did. And I really had to let go of that, because I bet there are people who are, you know, pay great attention to detail. So that was one important thing for us when we were looking for fulfillment centers, is are they going to be willing to, you know, do a little bit of boutique packaging to make it look like to fit our brand? We don't want messy, you know, styrofoam peanuts and clear tape all over the outside of the box. And I wanted like the presentation to be really nice. And we do change up the presentation quite a bit from how it looks when it gets to us from India. We revamp the packaging a little bit before we ship it out to clients or to customers. So that was one thing. They were willing to customize and, you know, handle some of our requests that I think some bigger companies might not have wanted to do. And then I guess the other big part of it was just trust. Like, we had a talk on the phone, and the fulfillment center Philip and I kind of chatted it out, and I think it was just a feeling of trust that these guys would take care of us. It was kind of a new company, which was also sort of risky because we're not one of 100 companies that they ship for. I think we're maybe like one of 10. So it is kind of a smaller scale than I imagine some of the bigger ones would be. But yeah, that's how we picked them. We actually got the chance to visit Austin, Texas earlier this year. And so we've now seen the actual space and met the owner and done all that fun stuff. But I don't think that's necessarily, 100% necessary to do it beforehand. But if it makes you feel better and they're local, maybe meeting up with them for lunch or just getting like a tour of the space would help you get a sense of if they're a good fit or not.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I just like the way that you very specifically laid out all the steps and everything that you've done. I appreciate you doing that because it just was very clear and easy to understand the process. Now, from like a legal perspective or any sort of like documents behind the scenes, what's been your experience managing a business that then does has product that's shipped overseas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit tricky with customs and importing and all that. But what we do is I think we pay – I can give you an example of just some numbers, I guess. So DHL is the international shipping company that I would recommend because they're the fastest and – definitely not the cheapest, but the fastest, and they have great customer service. I've tried a couple others that were a little bit less money, but boxes got held up at customs for weeks and I couldn't get a hold of the right person. And so I think DHL is a good choice, even though it is a little bit pricier. But anyway, for about, I want to say $5,000 worth of boxes, we paid $36 in customs fees, and they'll contact you. They'll say, we have your packages here in LA Customs. We just need some information and your payment, and then they just ship it right along. And it's really easy these days with tracking. Like, you can follow, I follow it going from India to Germany to Ohio to LA. Gosh. And yeah, those boxes, they go through a long journey to get all the way to California.
That is so fascinating to me. So as we wind down, what is, like, how are you planning your 2018 year goals, both professionally and personally?
Mm-hmm. 2018, I really want to start some more projects. And I've had a couple, like, turning around in my head for a while, but I haven't had the time to commit to them. And so I realized before I start anything new that I have to somehow create some time for myself. So one thing that I really hope to do is outsource even more of LaRue's shop. At this point, we have a lot of it outsourced, already, from the shipping to someone checking and responding to a lot of our emails. But I still do like a few things behind the scenes. So if I could get totally hands off, except for like creating new products, that would give me more time. And then the other thing that would give me more time is only saying yes to weddings and projects that really excite me. Mm-hmm. I think being in year four of doing photography, I still get excited when I get an inquiry, like, no matter if it's something I want to do or not. But now I kind of take a step back and I think about, is this really something that's going to add to my portfolio or that I'm going to enjoy doing? Or is it just another thing to get like some quick money? Like, I really want to feel like every product I do, I'm putting my whole heart into it. So I think I'll start saying no to some stuff, and that will also give me some more time to do these other projects. And I also I'm very scattered in terms of I wake up in the morning, I might start on one thing and then do something completely different an hour later. So I want to try to compartmentalize my days a little bit. And I was doing this for a while where, Mondays would be for LaRue shop, and then Tuesdays I could work on selling my travel prints, and Wednesdays could be for weddings. And I think just doing that and not opening emails like first thing in the morning so that it dictates what you do like all day. I'd love to start with one important task each day before I like jump into the mail, the inbox and get all distracted by the things that happened while I was sleeping. So hopefully more time, just because my plan for 2018 is just more time and being really purposeful with the time that I have.
I'm with you on that too. Sometimes it's like a bad addiction of getting up and still doing my morning routine, but then the first thing I like default to is my Gmail account, and I'm like, wait, no, like go do some other very intensive like or creative work that opens that up. And well, I appreciate you for sharing that, and thank you for coming on the show. The last question I have is, can you share with my listeners where they can find out more information about you and visit and view your product?
Yes, of course. My website is katiedoherty.me, not .com, but .me at the end. And all of our products and Instagram is LaRue's shop. LaRue's has two S's, and shop has an extra P and E at the end. And if you go there, you can see all of the pretty products. And our Instagram has really beautiful inspiration if you're a photographer of any kind. We get so many great pictures from people tagging us on Instagram. So yeah, LaRue's shop.
Awesome. Thank you, Katie, so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidithirway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.